Hi guys, it's Ray. This is our first conversation and interview piece that we're going to release, and we hope you enjoy it. At Leaders and Managers Hub, we're always interested to hear people's stories, learn about their journeys, share their interesting experiences and their perspectives. So if you know somebody who you think would make an interesting interviewee, or if you yourself feel that you've got some interesting stories to share, get in touch, podcast@leadersandmanagershub.com. Enjoy the show. It's just so incredible. Gotta have it, can't let it go. If you don't try, you'll never know that this is incredible. Now have you ever wondered how the best did it? They never second guessed, they didn't set limits. Are you a follower or a visionary? Can you handle the load that you were meant to carry? Cause we're on a mission, listen, it's beyond description. We don't wanna fit in if we're living in a contradiction. We need a brand of passion that you can't imagine. Don't hesitate, rub the lamp a lad. So welcome to Leaders and Managers Hub, the podcast. And today we have with us Dave Burton from QBH Solutions. Welcome to the show, Dave.
Thanks, Ray. Thanks very much for having me. Hello, everybody.
Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it, Dave. So, Dave, tell us a little bit about your professional background and how you sort of got into human resources and compliance.
Well, I'm the owner of QBH Solutions. We provide HR and compliance support, as you said. How did I get into it? I kind of fell into it about 20 years ago, to be honest. I left school. I did an apprenticeship in business administration. I then did another course at college. Couldn't get to any of the further education colleges I wanted to go to. A friend of mine's dad offered me a job. Doing what I thought was kind of admin stuff, which it was for a construction company, and the rest, excuse the cliche, is history, as they say. So I fell into a compliance role predominantly, working in quite sort of safety critical, compliance led, compliance orientated construction environments, really, along the railways.
Oh, yes. It's my stomping ground, rail construction.
Oh, really? Wow. It's something that I'm still involved in a little bit, not as much as I'd like to be as I was, but I've got a couple of clients that still do that, and I'm still in contact with, you know what it's like on the railways, you kind of got friends for life in that industry, and I'm lucky enough to still go for a beer and have a game of golf with people now and again.
For sure, and I guess certainly from the compliance side, because it's heavily regulated industry, there's so much to know and to be aware of in it that kind of, it's almost like a niche market, and once you're in there and you know what the rules of the game are, you're in demand. So Dave, tell us a little bit about QBH Solutions, what you do, where you started. Obviously you've already talked a little bit about how you started off yourself professionally, but where QBH Solutions started, maybe some of your contemporary work that you're currently working on, and what your aspirations are.
Yeah, definitely. We started in May 2015, having worked, as we talked about, through HR and compliance roles throughout my career with smaller micro businesses, really. And what I've had is an opportunity to build a real understanding of what small and micro businesses need. Now, it's very, very different to run HR when you've got a team of people in a department and not unlimited resource. Nobody's got unlimited resource anymore, but, you know, a higher level of resource than if you're a smaller business and it's your wife or partner or who, you know, your office manager or finance manager that's doing your HR stuff. Very different pressures and challenges that are involved in it. Anyway, I basically got fed up with being told what to do, Ray, to be honest with you. I've worked with some fantastic companies and maybe some not some good ones, but I think I got to a point in my life where I'm kind of, late 30s, early 40s, you kind of having a think and a reflection and just thought, you know what? I'm going to have a go at this. You know, how hard can it be? Yeah. Famous last words. And to be honest with you, I started doing that, and then I worked for a friend doing a bit of labouring and a bit of painting and decorating during the day to pay the mortgage, and worked on this in the evenings, weekends, as you do. And then it towards the end of that summer. I was lucky enough to be doing this most of the time. And then you just try and do a good job for people, and hopefully they keep coming back to you, and then they share the word about what you do, and you grow from there, really.
Yeah. And you're based in Dover in Kent?
We are, yeah. We moved here, we're about 12 months ago, actually. I set up in Hawking. I lived in Hawking. We had an office down at the workshop down on Tonton Street. We had an office over at Base Point. And then this time last year, my family moved over to a village just outside Dover. My accountant was kind enough to say, well, I've got a spare room. We can work something out with the rent, which has worked out brilliantly. So we're over here now, and it's funny how opportunities present themselves sometimes.
Yeah. And just for our listeners, so a little bit of geographic orientation, Leaders Managers Hub are based in Folkestone in Kent, and Dover is just a little bit along the coast. I'm sure a lot of people will have heard of Dover recently in terms of the Dover to Calais trade route. So if for that alone, Dover is most definitely on the map. But it's fair to say, Dave, that you know, you don't just work locally in the Dover and the Southeast Kent area. You know, you have the capability to work nationally and all internationally if needs be.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's funny you say that. You talk about some of the contemporary projects that we've got on. I've got a client who is based in New Zealand.
Okay.
So they're over in New Zealand. They're coming. They've got. We've helped them to get ISO 9001 for the products that they bring into the market. They were based here. They've moved their operations to New Zealand, and they're using continuing to use a Polish company to bring their resources over here. So they've got their audit here because they need the ISO accreditation to be able to deliver their products to the. They provide, I'm sure I can name drop a little bit, it's a company called EffiCheck, and they provide medical fridges and freezers into a very bespoke market, you know, to hospitals, doctors, surgeries, pharmacies. Mm-hmm. And so they need that accreditation, that assurance that the QA processes bring. And they're doing their audit at our office here next week. We've got quite a lot of clients, probably about 50% of our clients are in London, all around London, north, east, south, and west, from a mixture of both ISO compliance and HR support. But we like to work locally, but we've also got clients as far afield as Essex and deepest, darkest Hampshire as well. So, we try and keep it local, but, it depends how bad somebody needs us, really.
Yeah, and I guess probably quite a lot at the moment, your clients rely heavily on you as an individual, so meeting Dave Burton. I mean, so that, I guess, to a certain extent, kind of restricts you a little bit, but I think with modern technology and everything that I think as businesses we just need to think a little bit more outside the box anyway, and be prepared to work more collaboratively. And I mean, we'll get onto it a bit later when we get into the ISO stuff specifically, but I'll be very interested to understand what the future for that is for organizations who want to trade into the UK after Brexit. But we'll get all in good time, as they say. So if we can just get into the meat and the two veg of human resources, Dave, because it's a subject that's actually quite close to my heart. 28 years in the construction industry as a manager and well, all sorts of levels. Human resources has been both a friend and an enemy of mine over the years. So in my experience, in a lot of the organizations that I have worked with, human resources really seems to be focused on compliance and almost protecting the employer from its employees. Is this fair, or am I being disingenuous?
I'm going to give you a typical HR consultant's answer, which is yes and no. I'll give you my own personal opinion. I don't think you are being fair. However, I can appreciate, that opinion has been formed in the construction industry, which is very, very different to other industries, although it does seem to be catching up. Primarily, if you were to say that HR manager HR administrator is there to protect the company. That's absolutely right. But the best way to protect the company is to make sure they are conducting themselves fair and reasonably. And I use the term fair and reasonably because it's what ACAS, you know, you look at as a guidance. It's, you know, have you been treated fairly and reasonably? But if businesses are looking to really engage with the younger workforce and are, you know, looking to really try and get the best of the talent that's out there at the moment, certainly in places like Dover and Folkestone in the southeast, then yes, the compliance element's important, but they probably do want to start thinking about more current employment attitudes as well, if that makes sense, Ray. Do you know what I mean?
Yes. Yeah, and we've got an interview which we're going to be doing in a couple of weeks with somebody who works in recruitment and selection, and he's got some very interesting statistics on like the modern job seeker, which I guess probably influences an awful lot of HR undertakings. So okay, I accept that. I'm probably being a little bit unfair.
No, I don't think you are, because also what can happen if you're in a situation, you know, like a lot of our clients are, is you start off, you've got a great idea for a business, making whatever it is or providing whatever it is, and then you use your wife, your partner, your husband, your boyfriend, whatever family members who you trust, and that's great. And then you might have friends or whatever, but at some point you've got to go out to the marketplace. You've got to find unknown people. And you can, I'm sure your listeners don't have this problem at all, but you can sometimes get employees that maybe are not fully aligned to your values as an organization, shall we say. And at that point, the protecting the organization, the compliance element has to take a priority, because you've created your business and you've got somebody maybe that's come in that is not necessarily deliberately, but maybe looking to get more from you than just their salary, maybe some sort of claim or whatever. Mm-hmm. And you do then need to protect yourself. You need to protect yourself before that, really. So, yes. so you're not wrong at all, mate. But equally, you know, what we say to people, get us in at the start and we can put the foundations in to protect the business. But then equally, we can then start working on the nice stuff that can really put you ahead of your competitors and attract that talent.
See, my experience within main contractors in the construction industry has actually been that when it comes to developing people and development pathways and continuing professional development and academies and, you know, apprentices and stuff like that, yes, HR have an important role to play. But actually, I've not seen that they actually take as active a role as they necessarily should. Now, maybe that's because of a leadership issue among the senior leadership team within the organization, that maybe they ought to involve HR more, because I think human resources and business development, for example, have a huge symbiotic relationship to and role to play, in that business development should be more than just about sales. It should be about developing the business such that it is able to offer the best quality, most effective solution to its client base. Yeah. And I think sometimes that these organizations, that these groups within organizations tend to work a little bit remotely from each other, in that human resources need to be an active part of that process. Because as you quite rightly say, on one hand, you have to absolutely protect the business in terms of making sure that you're fully compliant with legislation and everything else. But also in terms of like driving the recruitment and selection process, it needs to be a more joined up thing. And my experience with these main contractors has been something completely different to that, with one notable exception, which I won't go into details about because that's probably a little bit unfair, but one particular international contractor who really got it right. And I, what I saw that they did differently to most other organizations was that they saw HR as a business partner as opposed to a function within an organization. And I think that's a key distinction. But maybe that's something for a future cast, maybe, because that could be a whole other Pandora's box that we could open.
We'll open that one another time, maybe. But Yeah, I agree. I think it is dictated maybe by the industry or the sectors within the industries as to how they approach it. But from my experience, the more that HR as a function can be involved in and integrated into other areas of the business, the more effective it becomes. So if you look at maybe some of our clients who's the office manager heads up HR and we back them up and help them out with any problems, whatever comes out, they tend to have better outcomes because not only are they dealing with the HR stuff, but they're also aware of everything that's going on. You know, same with operations, same with production. So if we've got the right people that are aware and we're bringing into HR, then that can be very good. I have similar experiences, I should say, with yourself, where it is separated and treated as an offshoot or something to be feared, then it becomes less effective.
Okay, so Dave, in terms of line managers, so again, and I'm coming at this very much from my own experience, but in my experience, managers who aren't necessarily HR professionals can often be a little bit afraid or at least wary of stepping over any rules or obligations when it comes to dealing with employees. And sometimes this can lead them to seem a little bit standoffish, and they seem to be more reluctant to deal with people in an individual way. And one of the things we've dealt with on one of our casts is around sort of leadership and how leaders need to be able to understand the individual and treat people differently because we are all different. There's no two of us the same. But treating somebody differently is different to treating somebody unfairly. So often managers are a little bit wary. And I'll give you an example. In my own experience, I've recently employed somebody who is classed as a young person under the law. And when I was looking into it to make sure that I was going to be fully compliant and to understand what my obligations were, I could understand why under certain circumstances people might choose not to employ that person, because there are certain things that you have to put in place and have to do in order to employ somebody who is classed as a young person. And so sometimes I can imagine that people will go for the path of least resistance, particularly for smaller businesses who maybe don't have a separate HR function, and you know, they're trying to research all this themselves, and maybe they're a little bit wary of it. Mm. What do you think we could do to support that, both within larger organizations who do have a HR function, so maybe HR could support the hiring managers a little bit more, and I guess as well, particularly from your perspective with small and medium enterprises that you work with, who you are almost their HR function and you're advising them on that. What, you know, is there something that you believe that we could sort of do better, or how do we make this a much easier situation?
It's for me, number one, it's about communication, right? In that when I work for bigger corporate companies that had the HR team, you do your induction, you know, kind of roll the HR people in. You do your induction. If there's an issue, you go to your HR people. So straight away, you are divorcing the line manager's capability to deal with things straight away, because it's escalated quite quickly to the HR function, which for some businesses is right. That's the proper way to do it. For smaller businesses that don't have that opportunity, the advice that I would give is to, you know, deal with things as they come up. Don't let things fester. So whether it's good or bad, if there's an employee that's doing particularly well, don't wait until their appraisal or their job chat or whatever it is to tell them to do it. Tell them. But equally, if they're doing something that you don't want them to do, or their conduct isn't right or whatever, challenge that as well. Yes, follow whatever processes you have, but don't be scared to deal with things, because a lot of things can be, with life itself, right, can be dealt with a lot simpler straight away, because once time ticks by, we were talking about time at the start, once time goes by, things can escalate.
Yeah, and I guess to a certain extent, if people consider like a situation in their personal life where maybe, you know, maybe there's been a bit of a rift with a friend, and you get to that point where you're kind of like, oh, you know, we haven't been in touch for so long, it's going to be really awkward now. And sometimes friendships and even family relationships break down over these things because there isn't that communication. And I'm very interested in what you say about sort of giving immediate feedback, because that is one of our particular passions within Leaders and Managers Hub, is to understand and appreciate the value of feedback. And sometimes it's not easy for people, because it requires a lot of us to step outside of our comfort zone in terms of we have to address a particular individual on maybe something, a behavior that they've exhibited or something. We find it much easier to praise people than we do to sort of give them more direct feedback about an improvement they could make. But it's something we have to do if we want to build more effective employer-employee relations, I guess. And I absolutely agree with you as well. Like, again, that feeds into the don't let it fester. There is nothing more shameful than sitting in somebody's annual appraisal and saying, oh, 6 months ago, you did this.
Yeah,
and the person is like, this is the first thing you've mentioned about this. Yeah. And when it comes to performance management and actually maybe having to manage somebody out of the business because for whatever reason they're not right for the business or the business is not right for them, you know, you need to be able to demonstrate that you have managed this in an appropriate and fair way. And that requires you to deal with it in and at the time.
Absolutely. And that's a really good example. You know, what if you're in a situation where what you have done is being challenged, what is going to look better for your organization? That you have challenged the employee on their performance, conduct, attitude, whatever it is, and you've got maybe notes of what's happened and you've got their feedback. You know, that is very, very different to a situation where you're saying, well, I waited 6 months before I told them and now here we are. So, again, I completely agree. I think as leaders, you know, as managers, as line managers, the organizations themselves, and I'm speaking from my own experience, my own career, the more training and support that you can have around various areas of compliance, not just HR, but health and safety, environmental, all the rest of it, the better manager you can be and provide, you know, a truly holistic line management style for your employees, which I think has got to be a good thing.
Yeah. And I think sort of from our experience in construction and rail specifically, most of our managers up until relatively recently have been in management positions because they were particularly good at doing the task, whatever it might be. And as a natural part of promotion, they get promoted into management positions. And until relatively recently, an awful lot of organizations didn't put any effort into making sure that these people were furnished with the skills to go from being the person who does the task to being the person who is managing the people doing the task. And it requires a whole different set of skills, a lot of them interpersonal, which, you know, for some people can be a real challenge. And it's actually quite unfair that organizations would have done that. We're getting significantly better, but I do feel we've still got a long way to go and we could really learn from other sectors. And so I'm interested from our podcast listeners, their experience in other sectors. And I would encourage them to contact us and challenge both Leaders and Managers Hub and you, Dave, you know, on some of their experiences. And we'll get on later on how people can contact you and how we can get that correspondence going.
Brilliant. Yeah, I think, yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I've got a lot of things to say, but basically it's just going to reflect what you've said. And the more, you know, the more that we can help people, I use the expression set up to fail, rightly or wrongly, that the more that we can do to help people to take on the roles as supervisors, as managers, even as directors in some cases.
Yes.
Better they're going to be and the better experience their employees are going to have, which in theory means, you know, you're going to have a more healthy and profitable business.
Yeah. Well, I mean, line management responsibility doesn't just start once you step outside the boardroom. You know, the chief executive of an organization or the managing director will have line management responsibilities too. And, you know, if for the culture of the organization to be successful, what they expect of their line managers further down the organizational structure, they need to demonstrate themselves, and that needs to be visible to everybody, really.
Definitely, I think I've been working with the company this week that take that very, very seriously, and mm-hmm. they have a very clear values document that is communicated to employees at interview, but also again at induction. You know, this is how you're supposed to be: trust, integrity. It sounds, for smaller businesses, micro businesses, it does sound a little bit waffly, but it can be really helpful because you know, you know very, very quickly whether that person's going to be right, but you're also getting a feel for how the senior team are and whether they're, you know, whether they believe in those values and are supporting them, or whether they're at right angles to them as well.
Yes. Yes. And I think sometimes my experience has been that sometimes senior leadership teams don't understand the value of that. I could give loads of examples, but, you know, I don't want to name and shame, where, you know, the senior leadership team have been invisible to the organization. So not just in respect of, you know, how we manage our people, but in every way. And they expected the culture that they understood existed out there to be there, because they were in their own little bubble. And when they eventually did start to come out into the organization and suddenly realized that it wasn't how they envisaged it, they didn't really know where to go, and they became very discombobulated by it. And they're still trying to overcome that. Mm-hmm. I'm very interested to get your take on whether senior leaders within organizations should take more of an active part in employee relations. So again, I've seen in a lot of examples where, you know, employee relations issues are left solely and entirely with HR. And the, you know, the senior HR representative then reports to the board. And this is even in cases of redundancies and, you know, significant upheaval and change and transformation within an organization. In your experience, do you think that senior leaders should take more of an active role, or do you think that on the whole they do tend to do that?
It depends on the personality and the style of the line manager, to be brutally honest. But I think personally, in most cases, the involvement of the senior team is very, very important to the fluidity, to the success of the outcomes of that process. You know, to have in all the hundreds, if not thousands, of bits of these that I had over the years, the most successful ones, the most congruent ones, if you like, are the ones where the senior team have stood up and been counted and involved themselves in the process, good or bad. Mm-hmm. Especially around transformation, management change, those kind of areas that are disruptive, they're scary for people. Most people like today to look a lot like yesterday, and for tomorrow to look a lot like today. So if that is the case, we need, as managers, as leaders, as senior team members, to facilitate that very, very sensitively. Not just because you don't want to end up in a tribunal or whatever, but because it's the right thing to do.
Yes.
Not everybody is, you know, running a business or a director or whatever and have that level of control, you know, effectively controlling other people's lives. And that does need to be treated sensitively and appropriately. But coming back to your original question, without a shadow of a doubt, the more that you can integrate and bring in the senior team or the line manager or the supervisor with HR and be supported by HR as a team, as a unit, the better the outcomes will be for that organization.
Yeah. And the question that was supposed to come next, but got subverted by that one. Should HR? No. It was my. I chose to switch the order a little bit there. In terms of the visibility of HR. So again, in my experience, HR, and this comes back to, you know, when there's significant transformation going on, all of a sudden HR turn up. And people get very nervous. Oh, they see, you know, a HR officer suddenly walking around the project office or whatever, and they're like, oh, there's redundancies. And generally it's the first sign that something is changing when HR turn up. But in general, do HR need to be, in larger organizations, this is, do they need to be more out and about among the people so that people are familiar with them? They're not this sort of nondescript group who are set off from the rest and have, you know, HR at email, but they're actually, you know, faces to names, they're individuals, and they are building their own relationships with the employees.
It depends on the organization, but I would say in the majority of cases, absolutely. I think the more visible people are, certainly from HR, and it could apply to other departments as well. I mean, you could apply it to health and safety guys and girls turning up on site. The same does apply. And that is, the more visible they are, number one, it gives individuals a chance to access that knowledge that the HR teams have, and also the opportunity maybe for the employees to ask questions as well, sort of unofficially, and so that then can disperse any potential issues before they've happened. Now, I'm not naive enough to say that, you know, every time HR people should be out every day of the week and show their face and walk around offices and walk around building sites. That's not how practical, that's not how it should be. But visibility can breed familiarity. Familiarity can then knock down an awful lot of barriers and improve communication, which ultimately, again, coming back to it, that's what makes good business.
Communication is the key, absolutely.
Yeah.
Time and time again, we see it. Because a lack of communication just leads to misunderstandings and fear.
Yeah, and not because people are bad at communicating, but because things can be misconceived. In this day and age, you and I are talking using a video link. You know, it's very, very different to if I would anticipate, you know, people that are talking face-to-face or through email or through text or whatever it might be. Technology's moved on massively over the last 10, 20 years, and I'm not sure that our interpretation of that information has moved on. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can look at the capital letters meaning I'm shouting, or, you know, exclamation marks and all the rest of it. So I think there is an argument to get in front of people and just talk like we used to do.
Yes. You know. And I would encourage line managers, especially if you are a little bit sort of nervous about employee relation issues, to, you know, to seek guidance and rely on either your internal or your consultant HR function to support you with that, you know. And again, you know, with the tools and tricks of that managers have available, like feedback. Listen, the first time you do it, you're probably going to get it wrong, and you're probably going to feel like a bit of an idiot. But do you know what? It's like anything else. You put the work in, you get better at it every time. And it's about building up that trust and relationship within your team. You're generally, your employees will forgive you if you're not absolutely polished and perfect from day one. They'll appreciate the endeavor. And so long as you make incremental improvements, they'll come along with you. And just you just generally improve that communication. So hopefully our line managers out there will take some solace from that and will actually consider it not as a, you know, that sort of hidden evil in the background of, oh, they only get involved when things go wrong. It's also about promoting all the good things that happen in your team as well. And I think at Leaders and Managers Hub, we'd like to see a little bit more of celebration of success.
Yeah, very much so. It is... Again, it comes back to the communication, but it's also great publicity for the organisation. It's a very positive engagement tool for staff and stakeholders. Let's celebrate success. Let's share success. Mm. And not you made the point a minute ago about making mistakes, and making mistakes is the best way to learn. You know, yes. my daughter's three and a half years old at the moment, and she makes, well, not mistakes, I wouldn't call them mistakes, but, you know, she learns from them so much better than I do. You know, if I make a mistake, I tend to beat myself up about it. Whereas if she falls over or does something, we brush her off, dust her down, and she's ready to go again.
Yeah. You know? Well, that's the resilience of children. And that's something else we talk about quite a lot within Leaders and Managers Hub is individual resilience and indeed organizational resilience. It's very important to be able to bounce back from the slings and arrows of modern life. So just to conclude on just the HR section of our conversation, Dave, like if you were to pick sort of one thing that you think that maybe we could do better that would make a significant difference in terms of HR and employee relations and how organizations approach the whole HR function, would you have any pearls of wisdom to give us?
Employ robots.
No, not at all. But somebody's got to service those robots.
Yeah, indeed.
And robots have feelings too.
AI these days is moving on massively, although my Alexa doesn't seem to learn.
Other smart speakers are available.
I think... only because it's relevant at the moment, because I was involved in two pieces like this today, it's you can't get cross and frustrated with an employee because they turn out to not be doing what you want them to do, or they don't understand or whatever, if you haven't gone through an effective recruitment process.
Yes.
And what I mean by that is you really need to know, number one, what job is it you want people to do and why do you want them to do it? And then you need to put a job description together that describes that in detail. You know, it doesn't need to be war and peace. It can be bullet points. But you as the department owner, the owner of the business, whoever it might be, you really need to know what you want somebody to do, why you want them to do it, and the skills and the qualifications that they've got. And then from there, you can go to the market, you can recruit. And then you can recruit against that job description and interview against that job description. Mm. What I see a lot of, and I'm guilty of it of myself within my own business, is gut decisions. And there's nothing wrong with a gut decision, not at all, as long as there is a plethora of other decision-making tools that are used, like an interview form or a skills test or whatever it might be. So I think you said, as of today, on the 23rd of October, what one thing would I say, based on my experience of the last 48 hours, is get it right at the start. Get that. Make it very, very clear within your mind who and what you are, what, sorry, not what, who and why you are looking to take that particular type of person on.
Yeah.
And that will help.
It's a recurring theme, Dave, like through all of our conversations at Leaders and Managers Hub, that it's absolutely amazing how little importance is placed on recruitment and selection. And like people will, when you consider taking on an employee is a big investment for both parties, for both the organization and the individual who is becoming the employee. And, you know, people take great care when they're, you know, booking flights and booking holidays or buying a car or buying a house or whatever it might be. And yet they'll make a significant investment, which also will impact on an individual's life. And they place so little value in the effort required to get it right. And then they only realize that it's a major problem when they need to maybe manage somebody out of the business or move them on, and they're struggling. And I'd love to know what it's like in other sectors outside of construction. But in construction, it's a massive problem. And when you're in a project environment where you've brought a team together in a very short period of time to deliver a significant volume of work in a relatively short period of time, as in years rather than decades, the need to get it right is absolutely vital in that situation, because you haven't got the luxury of time to be suddenly having a high staff turnover, and B, you know, if you get it wrong for whatever reason, you know, the culture doesn't fit the individual or vice versa, it can be incredibly disruptive to the team dynamic. And you know, it's generally never dealt with until it's an economic problem for an organization. But actually, it's a key indicator within an organization of where things are either going right or going wrong. If you're making successful recruitment and selection choices, that will be reflected in your team cohesion and your overall productivity.
Absolutely. It's a cliche, but people are your most important asset. They are. But equally, you need the right people for your organization. And getting that right by spending a little bit more time at the start, maybe a little bit more investment in that, certainly from an energy and a time point of view, can pay dividends down the line, you know. And we were talking about it earlier on, but, you know, I've got organizations that have taken on an apprentice, and that apprentice is now a senior manager over the years. You know, you get it right, and it's absolutely brilliant.
Yes. Every hire is a potential future chief exec.
Yeah. Well, nearly all. Mm.
Yeah. Well, you've got to kind of be approaching it from the perspective of, you know, we need to know at the point of hire that, you know, this person can go far in the business, can grow far in the business, because, you know, ideally your aspiration is that the business transforms and grows, and you want all of your employees to grow with it and support that growth. So they you need to ensure that both the business has the capacity to nurture that person, and that person has the capacity to flourish and grow within the business. Mm,
definitely.
Cool. So in terms of QBH solutions and the services that you offer for human resources, how do potential clients engage you, Dave? Do you do a pay per consultation, or is there a retainer, or what's the model for people to be able to engage you?
We've got kind of a couple of areas. We do a retainer. We offer unlimited phone and email support for companies for a retainer amount per month. There's no minimum tie-in. It's a monthly rolling contract. That's one option. Anything that requires us to do a site visit or a piece of work may be associated with that maybe a disciplinary or a grievance or an appraisal or whatever, we'd then quote separately for that around a day rate. People come to us through the website, via email, phone calls. We get a lot of our current clients referring us to their contacts, and we try and hopefully listeners have got a real understanding of how we try and work, which is to try and diffuse things before it gets to the point where anything too serious needs to happen.
For sure.
And the best way to do that is to have somebody on a retainer or somebody at the end of the phone that you can pick up the phone to and go, Dave, this has happened. What do I do? And what I've found over the last nearly 5 years now is actually people know what most of our clients know what they need to do, but they're looking for a little bit of a reassurance and a little bit of a, you know, just to let them know, a little bit of confidence that what they're doing is the right thing to do. And we can do that, and we can help. Not everybody, but, you know, that's...
Well, I mean, as a small business owner myself, and somebody who's worked in, you know, for 28 years in line management positions and stuff, if you're starting out, or if you're an SME and you don't already have a HR function, you know, you'll have an accountant, a legal provider, legal services provider on retention. I would encourage all SMEs to also consider having a HR consultant on a retainer, or have access to one, because, you know, again, for all the reasons that we've talked about, getting it right is a very, very, it's great value, the money you spend when you get it right. And also it's great value when sometimes you don't necessarily get it right, to make sure that everything's done fairly and equitably for both the organization and the employee. So I would definitely encourage any of our listeners who don't have regular access to a HR function to certainly seek out people such as yourself to support them with that.
I wholeheartedly agree, Ray. But in all seriousness, you know, you have your web person, you have your marketing person, maybe your accounts and all the rest of it. It's not going to hurt to have a conversation or do a little bit of looking for somebody to help you with this. Absolutely. This really important part of your business.
So we're back with Dave Burton from QBH Solutions, and we're now going to talk about ISO. And Dave, for some of our listeners who don't necessarily know what ISO is, could you just give us a brief summary, please?
Yes, absolutely. ISO stands for International Standards Organization. And what that means, it says an overarching international organization that is responsible for various different standards. There's standards for quality assurance, for health and safety, for environmental management, but there's also standards for your mobile phone, for the glass in your monitor, for all sorts of different things. But the main ones that probably most of your listeners, our listeners are going to be listening, are interested in are the quality assurance standard, the environmental management standard, the health and safety standard, and the information and data security standard, because they tend to be the ones that clients are looking, or potential clients are looking for their suppliers or providers to
yes.
have.
Yes.
The lesser known or the other standards then become very, very specific to industry sectors.
Yes.
As well, whereas those four overarch everything.
Yes, and I guess how people will identify these things is that somewhere on, if they buy an appliance or something like that, it will have certain accreditations on there which will identify that it complies with certain ISO standards.
Absolutely, yeah, very 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 much so. Hmm. The standards are, as I say, well, as it implies, they're international standards. And what they do are they're documents that detail what businesses are expected to do, not necessarily how to do it, but what they're expected to do to be certificated to that standard. Mm-hmm. So to give a very brief example, to talking about the quality assurance standards, it says in one of the clauses that a business should understand the needs and expectations of its interested parties, which in normal everyday speak means that the business needs to know, you know, who your stakeholders are and what information they need. Mm-hmm. And that is something that the standards need you to have. So it's basically a document or documents that tell you what your business should have or be doing to satisfy the requirement of that standard. And then if you're doing all that, you should get a nice shiny certificate to prove you're doing it.
And so ISO standards are fully incorporated into UK law. They are recognized and relied upon within the United Kingdom for all of these goods and services and everything else.
They are. I'm not sure if it's within law, but it can certainly be referred to, for example, with the health and safety standard, where we're looking at operational delivery aspects in terms of risk assessments, method statements, that kind of stuff. Then there's a crossover there, quite obviously, with the Health and Safety at Work Act and duty of care to employees. So that is where that crossover comes. Mm. The standards had a review and a refresh in 2015 to align them closer together. Previously to that, all four standards were very, very different, but now Section 4 of 9001 is the same as Section 4 of 14001. So and what they do is they instruct or direct the organisation to be aware of the legislation that impacts on it. Mm-hmm. And its operations.
Yeah. And standards audits are carried out by a number of different third-party organizations who are accredited to then issue a certificate of compliance to say that somebody has achieved that particular accreditation. I'm thinking of like, is it BMI Strada and companies like that?
BM Trada,
that's Euro, it.
BSI, these organizations, there are, these are, I call them certification companies.
Yeah.
And there are good and bad certification companies. We tend to work predominantly with certification companies that are UCAS accredited. So the UCAS is the overarching body that basically says that these certification companies are able to go and audit companies.
Yes.
They're the kite mark, the stamp, the quality assurance, if you like, of those certification companies. There are companies that don't have UCAS accreditation. That's not to say they're not very good and brilliant, but most of our clients, their clients or tenders or PQQs that they're filling in require them to have a UCAS accredited ISO system.
Mm. And generally, for people who don't know, these require audits where people come into your organization and you have to demonstrate where you have met the requirements of the standard to be able to demonstrate compliance.
Absolutely. There's if you're brand new to the process, you'll have a stage one audit, which means the auditor will come in and have an overview of what you've put together, let you know what's good, what needs developing, and then they'll come back in a couple of months' time for the stage two where you get your certificate. And then you're audited annually after that. So every 12 months they'll come back in and look at stuff. We've got, we're kind of going into our, we call it silly season for audits really. We've got, I think, 5 or 6 over the next week or so. And we do, a lot of our clients, we go in just to help really be there, translate almost from between the auditor and the employees, especially the client, especially where we've put the systems in place. The auditor might ask a question that isn't necessarily the client's familiar with, but we can facilitate that and just,
yes, because in larger organizations they'll have a quality assurance or an assurance function within the organization who will manage all that for them. Absolutely. And sometimes, I mean, I know from my own experience, you know, you're kind of sitting there doing your day job and all of a sudden somebody lands at your desk going, oh, we've got an auditor here, can you just show them through such and such a process? And if you're not prepared for it or not used to it, it can sometimes put you under a little bit of pressure.
Most auditors these days seem to be a little bit more friendly and able to communicate. We've talked about that a bit today.
Yeah.
One of my first ever audits, going back about a number of years back, the auditor came in. And it was for a safety critical competence for the organisation, so something that was quite serious, quite important. And the guy, you know, I don't mean to be disrespectful, but you know, to be fair, he didn't take a cup of tea, he didn't take a cup of coffee. There was, you know, it felt like we'd been audited, you know. Whereas the audits that I've been doing recently, certainly with some certification companies, have just been, don't get me wrong, they're not easy. They're not meant to be easy. If it was easy, we would have the qualification. But they are more inclined to communicate, put you at your ease. And I think that, you know, over the last 10 years or so, the certification companies have really caught up with that and understand that actually, you know, these people are their clients. And they, although, you know, it's an important process, they should be treated as clients as well. And they've humanized it a bit more, which I think is really important.
Yeah. And are they easy, Dave? Or is this, for some organizations, just a tick box exercise?
They're easy. If you have a consultant and you've got a senior team maybe that are engaged and committed to it, some of our clients, it's a tick box exercise, and that's fine as well. We can do that. We go in, we do everything for them, and they keep their certificate. But we still encourage the senior team to certainly get involved in the management review meeting. If, like the client I'm going to see tomorrow, are completely, you know, engaged in it, they've got work groups, they've got people across all levels of the organization looking at it and trying to make it work for them, our job becomes a little bit harder, but they get a higher level of value for money from that process and the things that these standards can do for them in terms of efficiency, standardization, you know, all the other the bits and pieces that are good. You know, a certificate, the relevant ISO certificate will bring to them.
They're used to validate some of the trusted trader schemes, aren't they?
Yes, absolutely. Mm. Trusted Trader, CHAS, Construction Line, they do make reference to, does the organization have ISO, certainly 9001 and 45001, which is the new health and safety standard.
Yeah. So for SMEs, they are absolutely value for money then in like, more often than not, that actually it is, again, a bit like human resources. It's a good investment to make in that, you know, it allows you then to sort of promote yourself and it gets around some other checks and balances that would have to be in place if you didn't have this accreditation.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm going to say that anyway, of course. Yes. I have, but, you know, if you're looking to do any sort of work with bigger companies, public sector companies or public interfacing companies, local councils, you know, anything that requires maybe a tender or PQQ, pre-qualification,
yes,
questionnaire or process, having these certificates in place, having these systems in place will make that process easy. Meaning you can basically focus on the pricing, which, let's be honest, can be the hardest part.
Yeah, and it's fair to say, like, really any publicly funded or capitally funded project is likely that you won't even pre-qualify without having at least the very basic ISO accreditations.
Yes, I don't want to generalise, but in most cases it's required as pre-qualified, or if not, if you don't have the certificate, then you need to demonstrate that you have the policies and or processes in place.
Yes.
Just to give you an example, the tender might say, have you got ISO 9001? If so, great, attach a copy of the certificate and move to the pricing section. If you say no, then what it might do is say, can you please upload your customer satisfaction procedure, your operational delivery procedure, your last 10 internal audits or whatever it might be.
Yeah.
And then you would probably be disqualified, if you like, because you haven't got that information. Mm. You're not disqualified because you haven't got ISO, but you're disqualified because you haven't got the evidence that ISO clearly meets.
Yes.
That makes any sense at all. Sorry about
that.
Yeah,
no, it does. Because like the ISO accreditation almost tells commissioning clients that, you know, you've passed through, you're saving them having to do that audit themselves to make sure that you've got all these systems and processes in place. By the fact that you've passed an audit and you've been issued with an ISO accreditation, it does that work for them. Otherwise they'd have to come out and basically audit you. And so it's almost like a, you can understand why organizations and commissioning bodies would use it, because it saves them an awful lot of time in terms of them having to go and individually audit potential suppliers.
Definitely. And it becomes more and more relevant, I think, because 2015, the procurement regulations changed to facilitate more contracts going to smaller companies. To open it up to smaller businesses, which was great and fantastic, and that's what we want to happen. But equally, they're still needing to have this certification. So although these contracts are opening up now, which is brilliant, as the longer term contracts come to an end, they're opening up to smaller businesses. Smaller businesses aren't necessarily being discredited straight away because they don't have the size. They still need to have a certain certificate.
Yeah.
Relevant to the activities that they're doing.
So in terms of then for SMEs, you know, maybe people who were like you and me, you know, had worked for years for other people and then suddenly had the gem of an idea to work for ourselves, because obviously we'll be able to dictate our own hours and we can take as many days off as we want. And then you realize the truth. It's not like that, folks. So like, you know, what would be the significant challenges? So somebody has a gem of an idea. They've maybe been in an employed position for years, and they're suddenly thinking, "Hey, I can do this as a private entity, and so I'm going to break out on my own, start my own limited company, and all that sort of thing." What's the first sort of steps they need to take in terms of their ISO accreditation?
Have a real think about how valuable it's going to be to them and whether they want it, because there is a value in how it can help him. It's a great business management tool. It's something that, whether you've got the certificate or not, the things it gets you to think about and document and formalize are just so important in today's business climate. You know, with the uncertainty we've got around Brexit and all the rest of it, it helps you to manage those risks. So I think the first step is really, you know, figure out why you're doing it. Number one, does your client want it and you're not that bothered about it? Great, no problem at all. We can help you with that. You can do that. Or number two, is it there to add value as well? Great, brilliant. We can help you with that as well. But they're different ways of facilitating that for you. And what one of the favorite parts of my job, and I love what I do, I'm lucky enough to be doing something that I love doing. And a lot of people call me a sad wizard or whatever. I don't care.
Do you get invited to parties, Dave?
No, I don't. No. And even if I do, I'm in the kitchen holding a bottle of wine. So, yeah, I'm comfortable with that. You know, my wife less so, but there we go. But what was I saying? So the thing to do is to have a, you know, is when we get a client and they come to us and go, "Oh, it's bloody ISO stuff." And then we do a management review meeting, or we do an internal audit, and then they see that we've updated a process, and then it's actually saved them a bit of money, or they're meeting their targets and the light bulb comes on. Mm. That, to me, that's one of the best things that I can do about my job. I love it because I just see the value of it and how it can help them. And it's all, you know, they've been doing it for 20 years. Oh, bloody hell, these bloody ISO people, what's going on? And then, wow, I didn't realize that process, by changing that process, could save me, I don't know, 10, 15, 20% of my overheads because of the duplication in the processes that are used by a business. And that, to me, that's what it's about.
Sorry. So just a very quick one then. Just in relation to Brexit, Dave, and you know, what all the uncertainty around that and what it's likely to mean. I mean, you referred earlier to one of your clients in New Zealand, and that you're working with them because they're importing stuff into the UK, or for them, exporting stuff into the UK via Poland. I mean, do you see any significant changes that may come out of that will affect you know, how people view and go about ISO accreditation?
That's a really good question. Initially, no, I don't think so. Saying that, we've, as an organisation so far this year, we've quoted probably the most amount of work around ISO than we've ever done in the previous years combined. Mm. But very, very suddenly, everything's just stopped. And what our clients are saying to us is, look, we really want to go, we want to do this, but we're waiting to see what happens with Brexit. And that, I think, without being too political about things, is maybe one of the frustrations from the vote at the weekend, is a lot of people, myself included, were, you know, one in, out, shake it all about.
Yeah, one way or the other, make a call. Yes, so we know where we're at.
It, so we can get on with our lives. But anyway, neither here nor there. I think immediately, no, I don't think there will be an immediate impact on ISO. What could impact on it is, you know, where this legislation becomes changing from European legislation to UK legislation. If that is what happens, if that is part of this new deal or whatever, then there may be some changes to it. But I think that will take years to come through.
Yes.
If anything, right now, if I was a business, well, I am a business, is I want to put in those ISO processes because they will protect me from that change. Not everything. It's not going to fix everything.
A silver bullet.
Silver bullet. That's the word I was looking for, Ray. Thank you. It's not a silver bullet, but it will, if not protect you, then certainly make you aware, or better aware, of what's coming and maybe how you can manage and deal with it.
For sure. And in and of itself as well, I mean, particularly sort of for people who've maybe started off as a sole trader and are suddenly growing and have, you know, aspirations of scaling and stuff. Now's the time to be putting in that the hard yards with regards to getting all of your systems and processes and everything in there, because it's very difficult to do it retrospectively once you're in the thick of it and once you are growing. It's well worth your while putting the time in now, I would suggest. Would you agree?
Definitely, yeah. I think I'm not doom and gloom about it. Not whatever happens after the 31st of October, there's going to be changes, mm-hmm. good, bad, whatever, however you see that, that's great, but that doesn't change the fact that there will be changes, and the businesses that are going to succeed and survive that are the businesses aware of what those changes are and have strategies planned,
yes,
to facilitate those.
Well, the most successful businesses, even though they might start off with one person, ultimately they start with the gem of they think like a large organization before they even get going, and part of that is more generally to make sure that your systems and your processes and just how you operate on a day-to-day are A, compliant, i.e. making sure that you're keeping in with everything that you need to, but also they then grow with you and support that. It's something that you then, once they're in place, you're not having to worry about starting them from scratch. It's just a matter of making sure that every step change you make in terms of scale, that you reflect on what you've got and make sure that it's come with you. It's a lot easier to do it now and grow it with your business rather than grow your business, suddenly realize you need it, and then have to backtrack.
Yeah, I think, again, it's like the HR stuff, health and safety stuff, all these things is if you get it in place at the start, it can grow with you. Mm-hmm. The challenge from that is that you've got to make sure it keeps up with your business. I use the expression retrofit. That can work as well, but it is definitely easy to get it in. Start because it just helps that growth. As I say, it's like certainly 9001, it's a business management tool. It's been designed to help businesses, not just from an assurance point of view, but to help you run your business, to help you think about it and look at it in a very different way to maybe the ways that you might have been doing before.
So Dave, how can our listeners get in contact with QBH Solutions?
Give us a buzz. That's always the best way. Give us a buzz either on the office number or on the mobile, which is 07795-564-089, or drop us an email at info@qbhsolutions.co.uk, or engage with us on social media. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and some of the other ones as well. But yeah, I mean, to be honest, if you've got any questions, give us a buzz. You know, if we can help, we will. And then, hopefully that can help you.
Similarly, if listeners want to, they can email podcast@leadersandmanagershub.com, and we will forward any correspondence specifically for Dave to him. And we're also in the background trying to convince you, Dave, to do a semi-regular spot for us where listeners can write in if they've got any particular HR or compliance queries that we might be able to sort of deal with, just to support them in terms of the regular show. So, for example, if somebody's got a particular question and we think that it raises a valid point that is would be better more generally made, then we'll get back in touch with you and hopefully you'll be able to give us 5 or 10 minutes of your time to record a response to that particular query. But we encourage our listeners, if they've got any questions or they've got any concerns, or they just want to do a calibration of where they're at with either their HR or their quality assurance, then we would encourage them to give you a call and to get in touch.
Definitely, yeah.
Dave, it's been fantastic. Thank you very much for joining us on Leaders and Managers Hub, the podcast, and hopefully we will see you soon.
Thanks very much, Ray. Thanks very much for listening, guys, as well.
You can contact Dave
by going to www.qbhsolutions.co.uk, and all his details are on the Contact Us page. It's just so incredible. Gotta have it, can't let it go. If you don't try, you'll never know that this is incredible. Now have you ever wondered how the best did it? They never second guessed, they didn't set limits. Are you a follower or a visionary? Can you handle the load that you were meant to carry? Cause we're on a mission, listen, it's beyond description. We don't wanna fit in if we're living in a contradiction. We need a brand of path.